This time of day on a Saturday that we always like to reflect on some of the stories that have been making the news across Australia and around the world, maybe even some stories that you might have missed. James Fairbairn is with us, regular on the programme, and always brings us a slightly different dimension from openyoureyesnews.com. James, good morning.
Morning, James. How are you?
Stories that we might have missed include plenty featuring in Iraq this week.
Yes, we've been having a bit of a focus on Iraq at openyoureyesnews.com recently. And what we've seen is a power vacuum appear in Iraq over the last few months. Basically, they had an election back in March, and since that point, they've been unable to form a central government. Now, obviously, Iraq's not that much in our local news anymore. We don't have troops there anymore. And so it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, and we think it's pretty much resolved itself. But if you look at what's just happened this week alone, Monday, you had a suicide bomb outside a TV station, killed four people. Tuesday, 20 people were killed in two car bombs in Kabbalah. Wednesday, 12 were killed in the Iraqi holy city during the Shiite pilgrimage. Thursday, 21 people died in various bombings. So it's absolute chaos. And you have to look back to the history of Iraq. You know, how was Iraq created? Well, it was created by the English and the British and the French post-World War I. And they created this artificial country, which has three very distinct groups of people in it: the Shias, the Sunnis, and the Kurds. None of them particularly get on well with each other. And really, historically, you need a central, very strong central government to keep control on that situation, which, like it or not, Saddam Hussein was a strong central control. He kept a lid on the tinderbox. At the moment, there was a power vacuum, and it's going horribly, horribly wrong. You know, if you imagine this is a country with a population pre-war of Australia. Now, one in four of the population is currently living in exile, but still, it's a large population. That is a lot of carnage, and that's, on the mainstream news wires, which isn't getting reported here. But interesting enough, again, looking at the history and our legacy, our civilization's legacy in this, a study came out in Reuters this week. The US Department of Defense has been unable to account for $8.7 billion US dollars of the money that they took into Iraq immediately post-invasion. They took in $9.1 billion on basically crates, straight off the plane, straight to Saddam's palace where they set up the HQ, and they started giving out this cash. $8.7 billion US dollars has been unaccounted for. I mean, just basic accounting, let's have a receipt, please, when I give the CIA guy $100 million go and do whatever he needs. So that's pretty big news, and we're talking big money there. We're also, Financial Times of London reported that GE, obviously one of the largest companies in the world, settled out of court $23 million fine for not quite admitting, but this is what it was all about, allegations that they bribed Iraqi officials to win key contracts in the United Nations oil to food program. So you've got a whole load of corruption going on in there. I think one of the most disturbing things actually from our legacy, and this is a historical legacy that we will be looking back on for generations to come, is the use of depleted uranium in Iraq. And the UK Defence Secretary, Liam Fox, this week, in a written reply to the House of Commons, admitted that the UK forces used about 1.9 metric tonnes of depleted uranium ammunition in the Iraq War in 2003. The Americans will obviously use considerably more than that.
Yeah, just for those that don't know, what depleted uranium does?
Depleted uranium simply is a tip of a tank shell or an artillery shell is tipped with uranium. This cuts through, say, steel of a tank, like a knife through hot butter. The only problem is when it shatters, when it smashes through, it becomes dust particles.
Which, of course, leads to
uranium. So a new study was done in Fallujah recently, the Iraqi city of Fallujah, which obviously had major battles in 2004, which showed that rates of cancer, leukemia, infant mortality, sexual mutations were higher in that city now than they were in Nagasaki and Hiroshima post-1945. So it's like a low-level nuclear war was conducted to try and get weapons of mass destruction, which weren't there in the first place, which is rather ironic. One final, actually, just health issue just come out of a legacy of the Iraq War. It was actually reported that mental disease amongst US troops at the moment is one in every nine American troops leaves the army on a medical discharge due to a mental disorder. And that is a vast,
These are, as you say, amazing statistics, amazing stories that aren't coming out because I guess it just reinforces the negative perception of the whole situation.
We you know, rightly should be very, very embarrassed about our role in all this.
Okay. Can you lift us a little?
Okay, I'll lift you a little with a relatively positive story from The Guardian of London, which saying that Amazon deforestation has actually been on a dramatic decline, according to official figures that came out this year. Now, as you may recall, last year there was actually a record increase in deforestation. Well, it's been quite a dramatic decrease in the level of new deforestation. So you've got, I think it was 1,500 square kilometres have been taken out this year compared to 3,000 square kilometres last year, which is very good news. Obviously, the rate's going down, albeit, obviously, we need to temper that by saying the actual size of the Amazon is still getting smaller and smaller and smaller. It's not that's not being replaced. Interesting enough, also a number of other newspapers, from New York Times particularly, been focusing on deforestation over the last few weeks and reporting about a lot of corruption and timber smuggling, which is happening in places like Kashmir, Guatemala, Indonesia. A lot of that is actually being driven by the need for carbon credits by organisations that want to get carbon credits to obviously offset their carbon emissions. So what they're doing, they're clearing a bit of forest and then they're planting palm tree oil, palm oil, which is great in terms of, get the carbon credits because they've got forest. They're getting palm oil, which means extra income. Not so good if you're an orangutan or something like that, though, because, of course, your forest is being taken out. But these things are happening.
You always spot the other side, don't you, James? That's
I do.
James
Servant is
gifting us with his look at some of the stories that you might have missed over the course of the last week or so. James Fairbairn from OpenYourEyesNews.com. Let's have the grand finale.
The grand finale. Okay, well, my mum always said never mix politics and religion in conversation, so I'm going to do both. we'll bring it close to home, look at the Australian election. Involvement of religion in a political battle here. Mm. We had a bishop this week coming out saying, advising Christians not to vote for Julia Gillard because she's an avowed atheist, which I think is an incredible thing for a non-political person to be doing. And, so what? Mm. So what are her personal beliefs? As long as she can run the country. And I'm not saying necessarily vote Julia Gillard, but I'm saying why shouldn't you vote for her just because of her religious beliefs or not, as the case may be. The tax office also, Sunday Telegraph was reporting, the tax office wants a special national body set up to monitor all these not-for-profit charities, which obviously include an awful lot of churches, which is expanding so fast that $31 billion a year is now being drawn out of the federal budget in tax exemptions. So you've got these massive churches like Hillsong, for example, literally claiming millions and millions and millions of tax credits because they're a charity. Mm. And again, that's probably something that does need to be brought into the political mix. Mm-hmm. And just final little point, one of the minor parties running in the election coming up, the Senate candidate for Victoria for the Australian Sex Party, which is obviously an interesting name for a political party, but I'm sure will do very well amongst 20-something men who don't know much about the political debates at hand. And Fiona Patten, the leader of that party, actually, in her launching of their manifesto, called for a royal commission into child sex abuse in religious institutions in Australia. What she pointed out was obviously there's been a very similar commission in Ireland, which has been a great success. And she said, you really do need an independent adjudicator to do a proper investigation into the allegations. As the statistic she gave was that the church currently employs around 20,000 people, and of which over 1,000 have already been prosecuted. So you're talking a very, very large proportion of employees of a body being prosecuted for child sex abuse, which is obviously a very, very important issue, which, again, has slipped off the political radar a little bit.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that it's now back on the radar, well and truly, there for all to see.
Very early on a Saturday morning.
Thank you, James. Appreciate that. Those stories, no doubt, will be available for people to have a look in deeper detail on the website,
indeed,
openyoureyesnews.com. We'll see you again in a few weeks.
Thank you very much.